From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made about 4 years ago in the 19th Ward in the city of Rochester. A little restaurant opened called the Arnett Cafe on Arnett Boulevard. No big sign, not a lot of hoopla, not a big news conference, just a small business story that has become a wonderful small business success story. But the roots of the story go back a lot further than just 4 years. This hour, we want to talk to the owner, the co-owner of the Arnett Cafe, Norman Brown, one of the big personalities in Rochester, someone with a personal journey that he might not have thought would bring him back to his hometown. So why did he come home? What are the challenges for small businesses? And we'll also talk about creating a restaurant. Everyone has told us you need to go to the Arnett Cafe and get the chicken and waffles. And so recently we did. I'm honored to welcome our guest, Norman Brown, to Connections.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it is awesome to have you. And you know, I had to start with the chicken and waffles. You know, the chicken and waffles that we had the other day, everybody told us going to Arnett Cafe, you're going to have to get the chicken and waffles. We get in there, we look at the menu, and we look at the waitstaff's like, if you've never been here, you have to get the chicken and waffles. Do you, is that a law at the Arnett Cafe, you have to get chicken and waffles first time?
I'm trying to make it a law, just a law around Rochester. You know, I did some bus advertising before, and I put an advertisement saying the home of the chicken and waffles. So I did try to make it a law here in the city of Rochester. So, yeah, I do appreciate when those who come in to really try the dish, you know, I know it's a lot of people who do it, you know, but I think we do a pretty good job as far as making the waffle crispy for people, what people like. And it's almost sometimes you feel like you're at the carnival because it's pretty much similar to the carnival waffle as well. So it's almost like eating a good sweet funnel cake.
It's awesome. But what's the inspiration? Where does it come from?
Our inspiration was went to several parts of the states, and New Orleans were one, and California were one, and we know that they had the two specials of one was the shrimp and grits and one was the chicken and waffles. So not knowing, we was kind of fresh into the area, new idea popped in our head and said, hey, listen, let's run with it. Let's bring out chicken and waffles. So we decided to bring out chicken and waffles. So our first chef, we put a recipe together. We sat down, we did a few experiments, and there it was, you know, and came out very good. So did a dry run before we opened to see what the people thought about it, and it came out very, very well. So so far, so great. So very successful.
Yeah, so far, so great. I love that. That's your biggest seller, I assume, chicken and waffles?
And shrimp and grits. That's our two biggest sellers, yes.
Okay, so that's 1 and 1A. So my next visit, it's going to have to be shrimp and grits, is that correct?
It's a must.
How am I not going to get chicken and waffles, Norman? That's the problem.
Well, you have to do what we call it, Isn't She Lovely? Now, Isn't She Lovely is something we named after the mayor. It's a three-piece wing with a half a shrimp and grit.
You get the best of both worlds.
So you get the best of both worlds.
Isn't She Lovely? I love that. Now, Arnett Cafe has been open for about 4 years now, is that right?
Yes, it has.
I want to go back a little bit in your history first, and we'll work our way towards Arnett, if you don't mind.
Not a problem.
Because you grew up not that many blocks away from where your business is now, right?
Yeah, about 4 blocks away on Roslyn Street, where my mother still resides at.
What are your first memories of childhood?
Oh, man. I had a wonderful childhood. So when I think about memories, I always think about, I'm not sure if you guys ever saw the movie Sandlot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what an awesome movie. And I think that's what we were. You know, we were kids like the Sandlot. It wasn't nothing that we didn't do and didn't experience, you know. So I had a wonderful childhood. So I just think about building clubhouses, helicopters, bomb sleds, go riding go-karts, mini bikes, and sneaking around and cooking in each individual home. And that was our childhood life.
Wait, hold on. Sneaking around and doing what?
Cooking. Yeah, so when parents went to sleep, we went to each individual house and we did some cooking.
What?
Yeah.
You and your friends?
Yeah, my friends.
Whether how old
it was
were
making
you when
baked
you did that?
Ziti or, 11, 12.
And you were making, so let's talk about what you were cooking. You were making, you said baked ziti.
Yeah, baked ziti, wings, and just anything that we can get our hands on to just try. We were just those type of kids who just liked to experiment and everything.
Well, who doesn't love to eat, right?
Yeah.
But you must have somebody in your family then who cooked for you to want to do that, right? Mom?
I was a guy who sat by the stove, you know, watching mom cook. So when I did move away to New York City, I was always give her a call to, you know, find out certain recipes that I liked that she did when I was younger. So yeah, she always was an inspiration as far as cooking and health, and cooking very healthy too as well. So
I get a lot of that from cool. my mother.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
So what was healthy that she would do?
Oh, vegetables. We did. I just remember eating so many fresh vegetables and not a lot of fried foods. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Salads and she didn't cook with too much grease or stuff. You know what I mean? It was more broiled and boiled food and baked and more than fried and more vegetables than meat. So you always had a three-course meal, that making sure you get an even balance of what you're eating properly. So it was pretty good. Mom was pretty good with that.
Was there one go-to meal though for like a holiday or a big event that you that she would do that you loved?
Oh man, collard greens and fried chicken. That she mastered. She's from the South, so she was pretty good with that, you know. So yeah, those were it.
What part of the South?
Albany, Georgia.
Albany, Georgia.
Albany, Georgia. Where I was born, but I came up here when I was about 5 weeks old. Mm-hmm. But she was originally born down there as well. Our whole family's from there, so.
Do you know what brought them to Rochester?
Family. It was more opportunity for my mother. She wanted to go to school. So she came up here and went to school, and she got a job at the Strong Memorial Hospital, where she retired at 33 years. So it's better opportunity for her up here in the upstate. You know,
you're painting a really nice picture of childhood. You really enjoyed your childhood, it sounds like.
Man, I was a kid. I didn't have to grow up fast. You know what I mean? I did what kids were supposed to do. You know what I mean? And so there's no regrets. I mean, you have your cuts and your bruises, you know, as you grow up and just anything you do in life. But far as childhood, man, it was awesome. I still have the same childhood friends. You know what I mean? So it was just a great childhood, man. You know, it was a good, great, great block to grow up on, where you had great families, very successful families on there. You know, we had the first, on Roslyn Street, just to give you a little background history of Roslyn, we had the first black lady superintendent of the City of School District, Loretta Johnson. And we also had, we had the vice president of Coca-Cola, who also lived on the block. We had two high school teachers who all also kept you straight. We had some Xerox executives. So it was just like such a mixture of judges and lawyers and such a you could not get outside the block without going wrong. You know what I mean? So you just had people constantly watching when you left home. So it grew up everybody kind of did okay as they kind of grew up, you know what I mean? Just because of the focus of the block and the caring of the parents, you know, which I guess sometimes neighborhoods don't have anymore. So I'm blessed with that, you know?
Yeah, you talk about the sandlot. I think about, you know, the kids just going to the lot and playing.
It's playing.
And, you know, and it seems like today, if kids went to do that, somebody would show up and say that the parents should be charged with negligence or something. Like,
absolutely.
Kids can't stay out all day playing, right?
Absolutely.
And it's that kind of worries me a little bit.
It's a different world, you know. Well, the trust factor is not there anymore for society, you know, just not just for parents, but for society, you know. And we always look for the bad in a person, you know what I mean? So we never really look for the good, you know. So society has said, you know, kids can't play. Parents, you don't be too afraid to let your kids play in the yard with other children because of where they come from. The lack of things that we didn't even have on our mind is on people's minds now. You know what I mean? Stay in the house and gain weight and play video games. So that's what I see. You know what I mean? I force my kids outside. You know what I mean? Get out and play. I mean, enjoy the fresh air. I mean, this is the reason why also kids are not really immune to bacteria. You know, because you're not.
There's actually science behind what this exactly. You're right.
Absolutely. They're in the house all day, so their immune system is not as strong as ours because we was getting immune to everything. We was touching everything.
Covered in dirt all day.
Yeah, or dirt all day and snow and whatever. You know, so it's just a different society now, you know. So hopefully, you know, if we can continue to teach ours, you know, hopefully we'll maybe get back to that, you know, the growing community neighborhoods instead of the neighborhood. You know what I mean?
Talking to Norman Brown, the owner, co-owner of the Arnett Cafe. His wife could not be here. She's a little under the weather, but that's okay. And Norman and I have a lot to talk about here about his remarkable business. And he's talking about, I think a lot of us, as we get older, we think, it was better when I grew up. That's probably human nature. But I really share some of these concerns, and I wonder now, you know, you're not that far away from where you grew up.
No.
What are those neighborhoods like now?
It's different.
It's different?
Well, you know, it's a different day, where the neighborhood's not neighborhoods anymore. There's no concern in neighborhoods anymore. Fortunately, that I coming back to Rochester, I kind of see still things are intact as far as, you know, 19th Ward still creating a safety and safety environments with the PAC-TAC teams are still, people are still walking the beat and really still trying to make sure that the neighborhood stays safe for families. But I still see, you know, I mean, I think you could never stop it. I think you can't stop people from walking and where they walk to. So you really don't know who lives in the neighborhood and who doesn't, you know, because people create friends and friends come over and, you know, things begin to happen. You know, then when you have a group of young children, they become curious. Being curious with nothing to do and maybe a lack of money, not sure what the situation may be, we find ourselves getting into things that we shouldn't get into, you know, thinking it's fun, but it's not. So I see a lot of that more in the neighborhood, but I really be fair with you. I have all the young gentlemen that I see over there, never an issue with them, never an issue. Very respectful kids. I just think they don't have anything to do. And I think if there was more programs for kids to get involved in, you know, I think you'll see a lot of less guys hanging on corners, a lot less violence, you know, and because the conversation to change.
Less drugs?
Less drugs. I don't know if you ever see that in America.
No, you can help. I mean, and I think what you're giving us two different but related ideas, which mm-hmm. is that you talk about the need for more programs, more just options for young people to have things to do, but also a culture in which you said you grew up and, you know, you couldn't even leave the neighborhood without somebody checking up on you. That it didn't have to be even your own family, that it was neighbors, that it was the neighbors sort of knew the neighbors. And now the neighbors don't often know the neighbors, or you may know some faces, but it's less of a we're looking out for everybody feel.
Absolutely.
And I think those are different but related.
Absolutely. Well, you have to look at what the media portrays about everything, you know, and it sets a mindset. No matter how we think about it, it sets a mindset. You know, if I constantly say, hey, listen, you know what? This is bad, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. You're going to start looking at it that way. And it could be good, you know what I mean? So the media portrays sometimes things that maybe should be a little bit different. You know, it's like telling your story, how can I? I don't know it, you know what I mean? So a lot of people don't know each other's stories, so now we just decide to tell it the way we tell it. Sometimes the story doesn't come out as healthy for people. It affects a lot of others in that surrounding, and it's definitely as far as neighborhood. And basically what I'm really trying to say is that we had parents that wasn't afraid of us. These people are afraid of these kids. You know what I mean? They're afraid to approach them because of a lack of discipline that they have in themselves or maybe the wrong word, a lack of respect. That we feel that they should have more for adults. I see a lot of that, you know what I mean?
And adults scared of kids.
Absolutely. I mean, kids can get out there and almost kill each other. You know, you don't see too many adults get in the middle of it.
How are we going to change that?
Educate, train. I think people would do better if they knew better. But if you don't know better, you won't do better. So any kind of way that we can get the children out of their society for them to do better in life is truly important. And this goes back to what we had talked about earlier as far as setting up programs, setting up way out. Sometimes people don't think there's a way out, you know, but the biggest thing is jobs, you know, I mean, jobs, you know, without jobs that put me and you who have jobs into fear. You know, because somebody want what you have, you know what I mean? But if we can create some type of system that create jobs for youth, I think that will help out a lot.
Talked to a guy who has done a lot of reporting in impoverished communities all across mm-hmm. this country, whether it's parts of cities like Buffalo, Rochester, Youngstown, Ohio, Rust Belt, small towns, rural areas. And one of the things he's always saying is, stop judging people who are selling or doing drugs. That's usually what you do when you feel you've got nothing else left. You agree with that?
I totally agree. And it's not to say that it's right, you know. The mindset says, saying that there's nothing else to do. I am done. I'm laying down. But how do we encourage them to think different? Because that's not the case, you know. I'll be fair, before I sell drugs, I'll go work at McDonald's. And I don't think there's nothing wrong with good, clean work. And when you have a society that's saying, right now, we want it right now, and this is society we live in, and so I call it the microwave society, where it has to be, everything has to be handed to you in 1 minute. And this is how kids feel. So now, even adults sometimes, you know, sometimes adults get behind the eight ball, and they feel that they need to catch up. And they're so far behind the eight ball, they start putting other things in their hand that they shouldn't. But the willpower at a certain age is just not there to do that. So what do? They involve other ones who are young and more willpower to get out there and with no care and no fear, say, okay, this is what I'm going to do to make money. You know, and it also has to start from the top of how we change people mindsets, and it has to be the adults' mindsets, travel down to the young people mindsets. Kids won't know what it is unless you turn them on to it. You know what I mean? Or they're invited to something, you know? And that's a lot what's going on in the communities. You know, they're being invited to be this person. You know what I mean? And little do the kids know, the adults know, but they're not telling everything, the consequences that actually comes with it. So I think creating more jobs, which I think the mayor's actually working on now, is just really trying to create more jobs, which I'm kind of dressed up to go to a seminar after I leave here. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to start this, you know. I didn't do it to get rich. I don't know, that's a lot of waffles, a lot of shrimp. So it definitely wasn't that. It really just, honestly, man, so I'm glad that my wife is following one of my passions, is really to help people. And that's why I'm here. See if I can help make a change. I can't make a change. I can be a part of making change, though. You know, I think everybody participates. We can start something. We can start somewhere. You know what I mean?
We're talking to Norman Brown, co-owner of the Arnett Cafe, one of the really remarkable people in our community. That it took me way too long to meet Norman, and you can find him at the Arnett Cafe. We're going to talk, coming up here, a little bit more about the actual business. About, you know, they used to joke that, how do you want to make $1 million in a restaurant? Start with $10 million.
Can I have it?
That makes sense to you.
Yeah, absolutely it does.
You know, but I want people to know where they are, so... Arnett, is it Boulevard? What's it?
Arnett Boulevard. Yes.
And it's a piece of cake to find, but Norman, tell people where to find you.
Arnett Boulevard. Arnett Cafe is actually located on the corner of Arnett and Warwick, across from the public library, if anyone knows about books. You can actually find us. They still have books.
Yes.
And CDs. So you can definitely find us there. Our hours are open, close on Mondays, but we reopen back on Tuesday to Sunday. Tuesday through Thursday, our hours are from 7 to 2, and from Friday to Sunday, our hours are from, did I say that right? Did I say Tuesday to Thursday, or did I say Tuesday to Sunday?
Tuesday to Thursday,
our hours are from 7 to 2.
7 to 2.
And from Friday to Sunday, our hours are from 8 to 4.
8 to 4. And
yes.
If you go there, you're going to have to get chicken and waffles and strawberry lemonade.
Absolutely.
And shrimp and grits.
Absolutely.
And then on subsequent visits, you can explore whatever else is
absolutely
there.
And for those who like breakfast at 2, we serve breakfast all day long.
So you went to school where? Where'd you go to school?
Shalott High School. Yes, sir.
How'd you like it?
It was okay. A lot of inspirational teachers. You know, when you're a teenager, especially as a young guy, you know, all your problems lie in teenage years. And so, but high school was
great. And teenagers are always right, by the way.
Absolutely.
They've never been wrong.
Never wrong, man.
And it's always the adults who don't understand, right?
Never wrong. Adults see that glass, but we never see it.
But you had some good teachers.
I had some great teachers who inspired me moving forward, just really wanting to go out and be a go-getter. So, yeah, I had some great teachers, man, who were... wouldn't let you go wrong, you know, who really cared. I mean, and I can say that from first grade to 12th grade, you know, very caring teachers back then who community people, you know, who called your mother when you act right. Oh, can we give him a little lick if he acts wrong? You know what I mean? So that's the era I come from, you know?
Yeah.
We had a principal in our elementary school. His name was Mr. Taylor. And Mr. Taylor carried a big wooden, and I'm quite sure if anybody listened, they probably know Mr. Taylor, and he carried this big wooden paddle. But it was only from permissions from your parents. So if you were late, acting up, he had that permission to give you a whack. I mean, he didn't go any, no, wasn't nothing vicious, but you knew it was there. You know what I mean? You knew it was there. Different type of discipline game. You can imagine doing that now.
No.
Everybody be locked up. But a different type of upbringing, but only on parents' consent. So it was nothing that he would do out of the regular. And trust me, I probably had it done once to me, but I probably did deserve it.
you will admit to that now?
Absolutely. And if I see him again, I'll still hug him because he was really a good principal.
How do you feel about the schools that you see in Rochester now?
Different change. When I first moved back to Rochester, I moved into the city of Rochester and have two young children, and I one was not old enough to go to school at the time, but one were, she was in the second grade, and she did enter into the city school district of Rochester, but it was a little change, you know, a little bit more than what I expected.
In what way?
The teaching abilities and the programs and the stuff that they had set up for kids and stuff like that, you know. Great, fine teachers. I mean, Rochester has a great city school district, but let's realize it's only so far they can go without sticking to the program. You know what I mean? So I guess they do the best they can do with what they have to work with. Fortunately, my kids did not, they probably went to the city of Rochester schools probably maybe 4 months or 5 months. And then we moved out and they went to Gates for a while. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they end up graduating from Aquinas.
Did you make that decision to go to Gates just based on school?
One of them.
That was one of them?
Yeah. Well, you know, the first thing you do, you look at is basically, you know, as a parent, you look at the structure of the school and you go in to look in the back of the paperwork to see what the graduation rates are, yeah, the testing abilities and those particulars. And fortunately, whether the numbers were rigged or not, Gates had higher numbers as far as what we can afford at the time to live at.
Yeah.
So we decided to move out of there based on the school systems.
Was that a hard decision for you, having grown up and gone to Rochester schools?
Yeah, very hard. Remember in school number 16 when I went, that was not the same anymore. And 60, you couldn't have told me that 16 school wasn't a great school. I went there. I was a great kid. But it changed and it closed. And it's like, how did 16 school close in the 19th ward? And we have other schools open, schools in that carries more poverty. And this is one of the highest salary communities. I just wondered how did the school close? You know what I mean? It's just kind of obscene, you know what I mean?
Well, let me back up before you even made those decisions, because when you graduated, what did you think you wanted to do when you were finishing high school? Do you remember what was the career plan?
I always wanted to go into business.
Okay.
I always knew that at a very young age. I had a good friend of mine at a young age of 16. When I was about maybe 16 years old, he started a painting business called the Colossal Builders. We worked for him for several years as independent, so I was able to learn the business and that aspect of it. So I always didn't know. I'm always, as you can see, I can always run my mouth, so didn't know where it was going to land me. But after high school, I went to New York City, entered into a two-year community college, and after that, I found my niche in sales, which I did, you know, so I just never looked back.
And where'd you go?
I went to New Rochelle, New York, all downstate New York, mm-hmm, and several other boroughs as well. Came from the banking industry. Before that, sold cars. I really did a lot. There's probably no sales in real estate. There's probably no sales that I probably really didn't, just trying to get my feet wet and see where I can land at, where I, you know, didn't do. You know?
I think it takes a different DNA to sell. I think some people just would not want to do that. Did that wear you out, or did you thrive on that?
Selling cars wore me out.
Yeah.
Did that for about 5 years, and I don't know, just plays something on my heart. You know what I mean?
Well, hold on. No, you got to peel back the curtain a little in the car buying business. Why did it play on your heart? What do I need to know?
Oh, my God. It's just, I'll be fair with you, man. And maybe some dealers won't like this, but it's just certain things that, as far as what we had to do to sell cars, not, you know, or to make money, and It's, I don't care. You know, I'm okay with people making money. Really, I am. But it's a certain level you have to be at with honesty. You know, and I don't think nobody can be really honest in that,
in that business.
In that business, you know. Tough. You just can't hurt people, you know. It just played up a factor on me as far as, you know, high interest rates, you know. And some of the stuff you really can't control because it comes from, you know, your financial.
But you're still trying to convince people, this is a great deal for you.
This is a great deal.
So it sounds like it wasn't the selling that was hard for you. It was, you know, you were wrestling with how you felt about what.
Yeah, selling was easy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I had never had a problem with selling, nothing. You know, I always say if anybody can sell $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 worth of steel, you can sell anything.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean? You can sell anything. If you can sell something that before people drive and don't move and you sell it, you know, and that's what I felt like. I said, hey, man, I sold cars, you know, and I always think that. And don't get me wrong. I think if anybody go into sales, go sell cars first. It teaches you the in and out of sales. The good and the bad, you know what I mean? It taught me everything, what to do and what not to do. I'm selling cars. And so the next sales career, man, it definitely teaches you to be aggressive. Teach you to be aggressive, but you just got to learn how to tone it, you know, as you move along. So, and don't scare people with your aggressiveness.
And so you worked through different fields. Sounds like you did pretty well, but did you ever think, I'm going back to Rochester someday?
No.
You didn't?
My next plan was really to move to the Virginia and Maryland area.
Oh, why is that?
I just like it down there. You know what I mean?
Like Virginia is the place where there's nothing happens in Virginia. The weather's always good. There's no hurricanes.
Absolutely.
There's no tornadoes.
Like,
there's no scorpions. There's nothing weird like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely,
it's like the one place in the country where it's nothing goes
nothing
wrong.
Going on. So I thought it was kind of neutral, you know, and I had, you know, family close to Newport News, Hampton area.
Mm-hmm.
At the time that we were kind of figuring it out, my daughter, she was looking at Hampton University as well. So. But then, you know, something about, you know, said, Norman, no, go back home. And I think more because of my mother. She's retiring,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I just wanted to get some years in with her being away from home for so long.
She's still here?
Yeah, she's still here.
Same house or?
Same house.
Same house.
Same house, over 40 years. She's consistent. great mother, though. God bless you, Mom. But yeah, so those are things kind of like drove me. Kind of like back home instead of moving to Virginia, which I miss, in the Maryland area. So, you know, came back here, never thought I would be back here. Never thought, you know, sometimes when you come back home, after a certain amount of time, you feel like a failure. Hey, man, where, you know, like, and then you say, people, why, hey, listen, why did you move why did you come back to Rochester from New York? You was in New York, man, but people don't really realize New York is just a place to live just like Rochester. You know, you're not at Times Square every day. You're not partying every night. You know, you're living just like you're living here. It's no different. You know what I mean?
Except for it's a lot more expensive to live.
Yes, now, that's why they should ask me why I'm back.
Yeah, that should be your first answer. Have you seen the prices of New York City?
Have I? I experienced it, you know.
That's what you should tell people.
$2,500 rent, you know, for a bedroom. I mean, for one, two bedrooms.
We take that for granted here, don't we, by the way?
We take that for granted, you know. I mean, honestly, I took my 3% down payment from the city of Rochester, I mean, from New York, and came back here and made it a 20% down payment. So, and with more house to it and more yard, you know what I mean? So it was just a convenient, it was a move. And Rochester is such a family town. It's built for families. If that's why I don't believe when people say you don't have nothing to do here, you have a lot to do, it's just what you decide to do.
Let's get our only break of the hour and come right back with Norman Brown, co-owner of the Arnett Cafe on Connections. Talking to Norman Brown, the owner, co-owner. I keep doing that. And what's your wife's name?
Kim. That's fine, though. She doesn't mind.
Co-owner of the, I mind. Co-owner of the Arnett Cafe. And I got a little bit more time with Norman talking about his life, which brought him back to Rochester and brought him back to create the Arnett Cafe with Kim. It's 4 years now in the making. It's it's not a big garish sign that you're going to see. It's on Arnett Boulevard in Rochester, but man, I cannot tell you how many people in the last year especially have told me, you got to get there. Finally got there, and I'm glad I did. It's just a wonderful place to eat in Rochester, and it is so welcoming. It's fabulous. So, yeah, strawberry lemonade, shrimp and grits, chicken and waffles, and now let's talk a little bit about how you created this. So you've opened Arnett Cafe 4 years ago, but you moved back to Rochester when?
I moved back in Rochester in 2002, I think.
2002, and to do what?
Went into financing with the HSBC Group. Well, I did marketing advertisement first with trying to kind of feel my way out when I first came here. I did marketing advertising with Valpak magazine holders, you know, just trying to do some marketing and trying to help businesses out because I did marketing advertisement down in downstate as well. Then after that, you know, I stepped into the mortgage industry with AmeriQuest Mortgage, started there and took my heist on to HSBC Group. Fortunately, did pretty well there. Then the financial crunch came with the mortgage industry and there was Norman. So, you know, this game changed. So I had to change the mindset of, okay, this is over. The game has changed. There's really no sense of really trying to stand through the field. So what are you going to do now? By the grace of God, he gave my, won't want to leave him out, which was my partner at the time. It was also a vision of his. So I went into this with family members in the beginning. Fortunately, they stepped into another type of business and left us with this, and we moved on forward with it. So that was one of the things that we created with them, and wanted to actually just start something really nice into our community. I felt that there was a lack of something that we were missing. So we came back to Rochester with this vision of just opening a breakfast spot. Wasn't going to do anything different. I still had a job when we was doing this. You know, to be fair with you, I was still working. It's trying to figure out how we're going to do this and me work at the same time. You know what I mean? So me and my partner's wife at the same time, we were both contemplating, okay, maybe you can open, I can close. We were going back and forth. No, that's not going to work because you got to be back on time at your lunch break for this hour and I got to be to work at this hour. So it just wasn't really piecing the stuff together. So it was almost like this is not going to happen. But, you know, I went to work one day and this is, I guess, the time that everybody was getting laid off in those years. Mm-hmm. And a big person flew in from Jacksonville, Florida, and she told about maybe 30 of us it was over, you know. But I'll be fair with you. That's the first time I was laid off and was happy because I was so undecided about this restaurant and as far as keeping my job. I didn't know what to do.
So this was clarity for you?
This was clarity. I mean, she made my decision. You know, I grabbed her hug and I said, thank you, because I was in a toss of making the decision of what I really needed to do. And so I stepped out on faith and, here I am, you know what I mean? And God has been walking with me the whole way.
You talked about doing just breakfast, but you do breakfast and lunch.
And yes.
How did you decide to create the menu? I mean, what's the process like of launching a restaurant? Which you had to figure out a lot of things.
Yeah, I did a lot of research for 2 years.
Yeah?
2 years worth of research as far as going to successful owners who currently help me, and I don't have a problem with saying their names. Izzy, who's over on Buffalo Road, breakfast spot across from Prime Rib. Izzy was one of the guys who kind of sat down with me, let me know the ins and out. There was another gentleman in Rochester Tech Park. His name was Ron, who kind of shared some ideas with me. And we also had James Brown, who's on Culver Road, who also sat down with me and shared some ideas with me. So I was meeting with these guys, and don't want to forget about my guys who are not together anymore, Jim and Ralph, out on Buffalo Road. I think they're on Spencerport Road now, who shared a lot of great things with me, too. So I appreciate these guys. Everybody I'm talking about who's been successful for over 20 years or more. So I just wanted to figure out their success stories and see where I can go, what I need to do to get started to maybe stay in business just as long as these guys were.
Did any of them tell you, look, you're going to be our competition. I don't want to help you.
No. I don't know. Never really was no worry because those guys were great, you know. More on, the more better, the better it was for small business owners. James Brown was on the other side of town. Izzy, he's on Buffalo Road, mm-hmm. In Gates. Jim and Ralph was between Spencerport and in Gates. So it was really all everybody had different menus, so it wasn't like, you know, I'm taking anything from one menu.
Yep.
It just really was looking for an ideal for success.
What's the biggest thing that was there one moment where you said after a conversation with one of them, I don't know if I should be doing this. Yeah?
Oh, big time. Yeah, it was scary. It's like, what I'm thinking about,
You know, all I heard was hard work, hard work, hard work. You got to be there. You got to put in 70 hours a week. You know what I mean? So.
And you're going, 70 hours a week sounds exactly like what I don't want to sign up for.
not really, to be fair with you, man. I mean, I've been in sales, so there's really no time limit for sales.
Yeah,
so,
that's a good point. You're used to it, huh?
I'm used to 80 hours or more.
Wow.
You know, so just to make sure things go right. So that wasn't the fear part, but, you know, I didn't think that. I thought, as you said again, I thought those days are over, you know, going in
and here
and
you
putting
are.
Those in. I was like, here I am about to get into a business. But I said, hey, you know what? It'll be your own, you know what I mean? So if it's, I feel this way here, if, you know, success is either failure or being successful. But you wouldn't know what success is until you really enter into doing what you needed to do to find out what success is. So in order for me to find out what success is, I needed to know whether I was going to fail or move forward. So I felt it, even if, you know, even if I would have failed at doing this business, I still would have been successful in my own mind because I said, I tried it.
Yeah.
And never was a thought to say, what if I would have? You know what I mean? So I tried it. I'm very kind of happy with the results, you know. Most of our business been word of mouth, you know, really no hard advertisement. And I think word of mouth is, you know, good for all businesses or for anything, you know. I mean, you can't satisfy everybody. You just must stay consistent on customer service and just keep continuing doing what you're doing. And hopefully you'll satisfy somebody.
Now, I want you to tell me one thing that, as successful as you have been, I'm sure you've learned some hard lessons. Everybody does in business, right? What's one thing, if you go back 4 or 5 years, that you would tell Norman Brown? You would say, hey, I'm you from the future, just so you know. You don't have to do this or maybe do this. What's one big lesson that you've had to learn over these 4 years?
Customer service. Don't assume. You know, sometimes we assume things and sometimes it can create more problems, assuming. Ask people what you want out of them, you know, and be clear to what you need out of them. And I think that, you know, that solves so much between not just customers, between staff and everybody. And I took some bumps, man. You know, I said one thing James Brown said to me on Culver Road. He said, Norman, you're going to have to learn how to do everything here. Now, did I have a plan to go back there cooking and doing everything else? I didn't plan on going all the way there. I'll be fair with you. When I first walked into the place, I had on tie and shoes. I thought I was just going to be an owner. You do that. You know, but I think those came off like the third day.
When's the last time you wore a tie to work?
Oh, never. I mean, that was four years ago. That was it. About 4 or 5 years ago. And don't even attend to even step back on one anyway. You know what I mean? I figure there's two different type of owners. There's one that an owner that works and the one who just sits and tell people what to do. And I'm truly the one who works.
Absolutely.
And I feel good about it. You know, I know what I want. I want what I need. When people really can't give it to you, you know what to do. You can go ahead and give it to yourself. So.
Now, you said that a lot of the traffic for you comes from word of mouth.
Yep.
How much of it comes from people who, especially in the good weather, but in all weather, walks to you from the 19th?
Oh, 19th Ward is huge. 19th Ward is huge. I mean, number one supporters. Even when I went down to do the zoning and codes and everything, turned around and looked in the back, and I had a lot of supporters just from the 19th Ward, not knowing that they were going to show up to help me out. So great, great guys from the 19th Ward, very good supporters. Support me. I do most of this. So any catering in the area for the 19th Ward, I do most of those. I also belong also a deacon at a church as well, at the Enon Baptist Church, under the ministry of Pastor Jonathan McReynolds. And so a lot of support from our churches as well, you know, who supports me, you know, which is great. So I'm kind of happy about what the 19th Ward and even part of the 11th Ward is actually doing to continue to keep people open. And they always walk in and say, we are here in the time of need. So I'm excited about that. Yeah, I am.
If we come in on a regular weekday afternoon and the next 10 people who come in, how many will you recognize their face out of those 10?
Probably 9.
9 out of 10 now?
Almost by
9. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, it is. I make sure. I thrive on customer service, you know. And just when you guys walked in, you know, not knowing who you were, you know, I treat everybody the same, whether they pull up
in a Mercedes
or a bike. I don't
know if I've ever felt more welcome somewhere. Honestly, that's the truth.
Oh, that's because of you, man. you're a good guy.
It's because of you.
Y'all see this guy's personality is almost obscene, you know. And I told him that when he walked in. I said, I knew you were about something, man. It's just
Norman something about get your, you everywhere.
Something about his spirit, you know what I mean? Just say, okay, who is this guy? You know what I mean? He's going to tell me pretty soon, but I just know he was somebody, you know. Not that he wasn't somebody just because he worked for WXXI.
Everybody is somebody, Norman.
But yeah, absolutely. I was just about to clean that up.
but that's somebody. That's one thing that I think it was Vanessa Cheeks from Open Mic who told us, everybody who goes in there feels equally welcome. And she basically said, you're going to feel like family. It took about, 30 seconds to feel like family. So that's been, I know that's a big part of your mission now. So I just think it's great that you recognize so many people, that you have so much repeat business. What now though? What are, now that you have survived, you know, 4 years. Restaurants often don't survive 1 year, let alone 3 years. Now you're in year five now. What's the goal? Is it to maintain, to build? I mean, what do you want to do there?
I want to build. I want to, I got a few plans in the making. So hopefully, you know, I try not to talk about things before they happen, but I want to spread my wings to Rochester as far as I think that's a need that's here. I want to go into a catering business, a larger into catering business, and catering hall business as far as weddings and those also. I'm spreading this with the city of Rochester. That's one of my focuses and one of my dreams is to really, and that was my first one before I opened the restaurant, was to go into catering business. But, you know, this giving me a good start. I think that's what God had not wanted for me at the time because it probably would have been a little too much on me. But now I think this is giving me a good start being kind of new into the business and kind of getting to get to know what's going on, you know, and how to maneuver around it. You know what I mean? So I think I'm kind of okay right now. I feel a little bit more comfortable. You know how it is when you first start something. You're nervous for a couple years. And so I'm kind of like starting to, you know, sit back and being able to think again and moving on with the vision that God has given me. So that's one of my focuses. So, yeah, I do want to grow.
A couple more questions for Norman, and then he's been so generous with his time, we'll let him go. doing business in the city. I know, as we've mentioned, the mayor has been in a number of times and appreciates what you do, and you have some affection for her vision for the city. Let me ask it this way. If the mayor calls Norman Brown to City Hall tomorrow, there's no cameras, we're not listening in, and she says, Norman, I want to make this city the best it can be for small businesses like yours. What needs to change, if anything?
More support from the city, I guess, as far as, you know, there's, I don't know. I mean, things need to change as far as, you know, a lot of people got a lot of dreams, but with a lack of money. You know what I mean? I always call, we have champagne dreams, but with beer pockets, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then we end up drinking Miller instead of getting the champagne that we need. So maybe a little bit more support for from the city as far as how they, you know, entering grants and loans for small business people. Because in the long run, you know, you could think what small business actually does. They create the same thing as largest businesses, and that's jobs. And that's what brings people out of poverty. That's what gives us a little more safe environment to actually live in. Keeping people employed. It's keeping a lot of people more out of hospitals with less stress and depression of not having any money and or maybe stopping your growth because I can't grow. So those in particular things I think from the city could be a big push. You know, I think, and I really, 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 really think, you know, that they're pushing in that direction as of what I can see and what I can read. Mm-hmm. So I hope it continues. We need more smaller businesses to occupy more of the smaller properties. I look around Rochester and there's not enough places that's not open. And I'm quite sure that there's a reason why some of these doors can't get open and get people in who have a vision or a dream like mine. And so whatever the city can do to sponsor these self-independent business owners in the inner city of the city of Rochester, because those are only one who's going to grow grow the city of Rochester. You may have some investors who may come and participate into the city of Rochester, but it's not a growth. Mm-hmm. It's not creating anything but paying taxes, and which is fine. We need those paid too as well. But I think that if we get more, get them to actually support more businesses and get past maybe some of the red tape, I think you'll see a lot of increasing. And I guarantee you, laws are laws, and I guess that's not a city of Rochester problem. I think it's a world problem. If everybody, the government itself, jumps on board and maybe trying to help out their small towns, maybe Donald Trump will help us out.
You got a smirk on your face. You couldn't hold it together.
I couldn't. So,
well, who knows, though, right?
Never know.
You never know.
I mean, never know what people got. You know, you can see I'm religious, and I think that, not religious, I can see I'm spiritual, excuse me. And I've seen God use, we have seen God use worse people, and we know God can change things, and everything is in his control. So I don't worry about Donald Trump. He can only do so much, you know what I mean? I don't really worry, because I know at the end of the day who hands is in. It really is, and I truly believe that. And if people see some good things come out of Donald Trump, just remember it's not him.
All right, so let's end on a little bit lighter note. You're someone who grew up, I can't believe it, and if you missed it earlier this hour, I just love the story of, you know, 11, 12-year-old Norman Brown and your friends, wait until your friends' parents fall asleep and then sneaking around to make baked ziti at
Absolutely.
Their house, you know, like making food. I just love that.
Till your mother wake up, what's that? Yeah. What is that smelling?
Well, you're not causing trouble.
Yeah,
Mom, we
all.
Made you baked ziti.
Not at all.
You know, so you're somebody who clearly grew up loving food, but also had a mom who made great fried chicken, but also often made healthy food. So you have this diverse love of food. Obviously, now you own the Arnett Cafe. It's great. But when you are going out to eat, give me a few places if you're going to go for a great breakfast, a great lunch, a, you know, hard working fun dinner, and then something higher end. Just give me, where do you love to go?
Where do Norman and Kim go eat?
Norman and Kim, where are you going?
Okay, I will say breakfast. I'll be fair with you. I like the Cracker Barrel. I like going to eat there. Lunch, it could be various places, you know what I mean? I do like going to, it's a place on Genesee Street called Pop Styles. It's a West Indian spot. I love their food. This Is It, which is also another lunch spot I go to. And one that's out in Buffalo Road, near Manitow Road, I should say, is called Robox. I like going there as well. They have two, one in over there and one in, I think, downtown by the public market.
Yep.
And but other ones would be, I love Delmonico's, if it comes to pasta, the Pasta Villa, French Quarters is another one I like. And those, I would say, most of the spots that we kind of like venture off into. Outback, I love Outback. See, I'm a steak eater.
You like steak. You like protein.
Yeah, I like steak and protein.
You know what, though? I think a number of people, after this conversation, are going to find themselves in Arnett Cafe. You may have some faces you don't recognize, I hope. And I say this to Connections listeners. I mean, it's just the most welcoming place. Norman Brown is the co-owner of the Arnett Cafe. They've been there for 4 years on Arnett Boulevard in the 19th Ward in Rochester. Small. Don't expect a big, loud place with big, bright lights. Just expect the most welcoming place with the best strawberry lemonade. For me, chicken and waffles, but I'll be there soon for shrimp and grits and a lot. One other thing on the menu that we didn't mention that you like.
Salmon patties. Salmon croquettes, we do sell. Which is very popular. A lot of people doesn't sell the salmon croquettes anymore. We do them either fried or either grilled with a nice light batter of cornmeal on them. So I would say that would be something else to venture off to the menu that you won't find at most restaurants, which is a good. And, you know, get them grilled. You can get a little healthier, too, as well.
Rochester's and, lucky to have you back, by the way.
Absolutely. And it's a pleasure to be back in Rochester. So I'll say, please come join us at the Arnett Cafe. It's located on 332 Arnett Boulevard on the corner of Warwick and Arnett. And just come for a nice, great environment. I see so many much fellowship that actually goes on to there, man, where people come and stay for 2 and 3 hours.
I love it. That's, so, that's old school.
Yes, old school. And those are the things. I'm glad you mentioned that. Then I'll close out.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned that because those are what we don't have anymore.
Everybody's
the
like, get in,
town.
And out.
Yeah,
get in and out.
Get in and out. Boom, boom. Where's the diner? There was a place called the Crusello's Diner when I lived in New Rochelle, New York, and it was just the most wonderful place you can walk in. As you know, my name is Norman, so you can imagine when I walked in what you hear. Hey, Norm! So it was just like cheers, and that's what I heard from like 50 people when I walked in there. But it was just so, Caruso Deli was one of my aspirations as far as just customer service. Another one here in Rochester that gave great customer service, and he needed to bring his customer service, was Charlie Brown. He was always inviting, he would always meet you at the door. So those particular things I took from him, and I try to just make sure that I'm more welcoming to people and make sure that being a brand new spot, as I said, very small, cozy spot, you want to make people feel welcome. Saying, why should I be here instead of a chain? You know what I mean? But we know the best shops are the mom and pop shops, and we don't have the little corner. We don't have the mom and pop shops anymore who knows everybody in the neighborhood and want to get to know everybody who actually comes in here. So I thank Rochester for that and to give me the opportunity to actually share a vision. And we thank WXXI, our only local radio and TV station in the city of Rochester. We need to do a little bit more supporting with them.
Man, you're on a roll now. I'm just going to let you go.
So I appreciate them, man. Thanks for having me up. Yeah. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to me and my wife.
I'm sorry it took us 4 years, but I'll see you out there soon.
Never too late. My doors are still open.
Norman Brown, Arnett Cafe, Arnett Boulevard. Great story. Thanks for listening on this afternoon. And we will be right back with you on Tuesday. A member-supported podcast.